Saturday Night Live with Peter Dinklage is over, but we are just getting started here on Saturday Night Live, live here on Post Show Recaps. And now here are the two guys who are sure to wear their space pants every day. I am Rob Sister, and he's Rich Tackerberg. Rich, how are you?
Good. I'm glad I coordinated. I wore my space shorts to go with your space pants.
When I say space, you say shorts.
I say space shorts, you say space pants.
Okay. Rich, how's it going? We've been on such a long hiatus. I feel like we haven't done these in a long time.
I know. It was weird coming back. It was like I felt rusty and out of shape, kind of like the writers of SNL. I think it was we all sort of shared in that getting back up to speed groove.
We all went through it together. Peter Dinklage, of course, Game of Thrones, many other things, was the host this week. Apparently, he's in the new Melissa McCarthy movie that I saw a commercial for today as well. He was the guest host this week, and I think I did the old thing that you're never supposed to do. I think I got my hopes up really high for this episode, Rich.
I'm surprised you did. I mean, I like Peter Dinklage, and I think he did a yeoman's job on a lot of fronts. I thought he really sort of brought it. But, you know, he does fall into that category of serious actor who wants to come on the show and make fun of themselves, which is great. But we haven't had a great track record of that paying off this season or last season or the season before. So I think my bar was fairly low. I still don't know if it even hit the bar that as low as I had it. But as always, within every sketch, there was something to enjoy.
Yeah.
Even if in some of them they were few and far between, there's always something fun to talk about.
Okay. All right. So we record this live on Blab every week after a new episode of SNL. If you want to get your questions in for the live audience, you can post them here in the chat, and we will take your questions as we go through the entire show. Rich, let's jump into the cold open, which, you know, as they have done many, many times this season, it has been some version of some cable news show talking about the events of the week. And of course, in 2016, the political news never fails to disappoint. And we had a woman who was supposed to be, I'm not sure, is this a real person or not, that Cecily
Strong? She is. She's a real person that I found out after the fact, yes.
Right.
Scott Nell Hughes, yeah.
And so she was on the Kate Dawson TV show on CNN, and she was a woman defending Donald Trump.
Yeah, so this is an interesting, I mean, this is a new CNN correspondent that we're seeing, Kate Baldwin, something like that. I don't know her. Kate McKinnon playing the role, which I thought was going to be, all right, we're going to do a SNL classic cold open roundup of many different political stories, throwing it to many people. But instead, we just focus on this one person, as we said, Scotty Nell Hughes, which they announced as being an anchor from the Tea Party News Network, which I thought was SNL's making fun of the Fox News Network. But in fact, that is a thing. The Tea Party News Network is her actual
Learn
thing.
Learn something new every day.
Exactly, exactly. And this is a case where, again, you know, SNL has it very complicated, because I totally understand them using CNN and referencing this woman as part of the topical news. But they have to remember that people like myself, we don't really watch CNN. So I don't know who Kate Baldwin is. I don't know who Scotty Nell is.
Hold on. I thought you know everything going on CNN. Isn't CNN on in the lobby in your office?
It is. It is on in the lobby, and it is my, and the more Donald Trump that is on, the more my ability to tune it out. It's like I actually see a green screen instead of the opposite. It's amazing how I can sort of pretend it's not there. So, you know, this is a challenge, because nobody, I'm imagining that for most of the SNL viewing audience, none of us actually know this character that we're seeing, Scotty Nell Hughes, knowing the real person. And I think that Cecily does a pretty good job of what Taryn Killam does fantastically, and also Kate McKinnon does pretty well, which is create a character that is fun to watch, even if you don't know the person being parodied. And so I thought the beginning of this, especially the interplay between Kate and Cecily, was actually fairly strong. I thought that they did a nice rapport, the character sort of set up of the person, you know, the character, the fictional character is very clear. It's the person who's going to defend Donald Trump no matter what. And for a lot of it, I thought it worked fairly well.
What did you think of cutting to the Daryl Hammond, Donald Trump a number of times?
here's where it gets hard. And I certainly don't blame Daryl Hammond. And I don't know that I blame the writers for this, because you're sort of stuck in what Donald Trump actually said is so crazy that to have Daryl Hammond simply restate it again is underwhelming. But then for them to write even crazier things and then have this character respond to things that the real Donald Trump didn't actually say kind of is a hard catch 22. And I don't know the legal rights and clearances issue of this, but we're all under parody. I think this sketch would have really come to life if SNL would have broken format and done this sketch with Kate and with Cecily, and then real CNN news clips of Donald Trump actually saying the things he said without it being impersonated, and then watch Cecily Strong try to justify it. I think it could have been a much stronger sketch. There may have been 50 reasons why they can't do that, but if they could have, I think it could have made this a much stronger cold open.
That's interesting. Yeah, we had Donald Trump talking about Ivanka's breasts, which... Yep.
They are tremendous. She just gave birth, so they are tremendous.
Yeah. And then we ended up cutting to, was he just punching Bobby Moynihan in the face?
No, there was a bee on Bobby's face and he was punching it off. Yeah, I did like the Bobby line of, I'm voting for you. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great Bobby. A lot of good Bobby in this episode. That was a nice one.
Yeah, I also did like the line of make American grapes again. I thought that was pretty good.
Very funny. Very funny. So,
Rich, I also thought it was interesting on the Live from New York that we had a split screen where both Cecily and Kate McKinnon like turned to each other, though they were on split screen.
Loved it. We need to get Larry David watching this cold open. So when he comes back as Bernie Sanders for next week's cold open, this is how you start the show.
Yeah. All right. So overall, you seem tepid on the cold open?
I thought it was a B. I thought it was fun. I liked the character. I thought there was some...
Like the one on Bobby's face?
Exactly. I thought it was a B. I thought it was a solid enough start. If I had known where the rest of the episode was going to go, I would have liked it a lot more in the moment.
Okay. All right. So you feel like it sucks more or less than Casey Anthony?
Oh, come on. She's always late. Come on. Okay. How much does that suck?
All right. So we get to the monologue and here comes the dink. He's ready to go. I did like the line he said, if you don't know who I am, congratulations, you're not a nerd. But that was a pretty good start for Dinklage. But we end up with him taking questions from the audience, and Bobby Moynihan is going to be George R.R. Martin fielding questions from this. Rich, I don't know if this is the point where if I'm too inside baseball with the Game of Thrones, but I felt like that there are lots of funny things to talk about with Game of Thrones, but I kind of feel like that they didn't have an original Game of Thrones take the entire night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here's the challenge, and I probably would have brought it up when we got to the HBO preview. You know, for SNL to make fun of Game of Thrones, their own worst enemy is the 2012 episode of Saturday Night Live when we had the behind the scenes of Game of Thrones as a digital short, and Andy Samberg played the 13-year-old boy who writes boobs into all of the Game of Thrones scenes. That was such a fresh and original take, which trivia point, co-written by Kumail Nanjiani of Silicon Valley, helped write that sketch back in 2012. So I think this was really hard. We're going to see it a lot in making fun of it. I agree. I mean, I love Bobby as the George R. Martin character. I think he does such a fun job with that character. But again, we didn't really hear anything new within this. It was a lot of he likes boobs. We're going to make a joke about the cutaways. We didn't really dig deep enough. I always wonder with this, whether this is just they didn't have it. They just, you know, it happens like a sports team. Some days you just don't show you don't have it. Or was it a push pull between producers saying, hey, writers, that joke is funny, but no one's going to get that unless you're actually a Game of Thrones fan. So we need to just cut across the surface so that all of the SNL audience will get the jokes as opposed to just putting in things for the hardcore fans. I would hope that's not the case because we really want, we really want those good jokes because that's really what's going to play.
Okay. Rich, I noticed some weird things going on here with the camera work in terms of the camera shaking. Did you catch that?
Yeah. A weird night in general, I would say.
Very weird.
Yeah, there was a weird camera bobble on Bobby. It was very strange.
Yeah, it seemed like, and then I felt like it was a couple of different shots on that, on the monologue. I felt like I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know if it was part of a gag. It didn't seem like it was.
No, I think it was, it felt just weird. It's just a couple of miscues. Maybe one of the possibilities that often comes up, I think, is I wonder if they had another monologue again, maybe a Game of Thrones actor was going to show up and they had to scrap it at the last minute. Maybe they had a musical number that died in dress, and this was potentially written very last minute. I think that SNL is such a well-oiled machine production wise that when you start to see miscues, it often makes me think that they threw out the monologue and wrote something very fast, and the production team had to do the best that they could do to cover. But it's live TV and made a mistake here or there.
That would not surprise me based on what was going on with this monologue, because it did seem like it was, you know, the thing where it's like, it's not one idea, it's six ideas over the course of like they didn't have one strong premise that they put together. Then Leslie Jones comes in at the end as the dragon.
Yeah, Leslie Jones comes in as the hacky dragon being Leslie Jones, which is basically foreshadowing not one but two other sketches we're going to see this evening, which was very strange to me. Although I don't want to move past this without saying, to me, the MVP of this sketch was Vanessa Bayer, who's willing to take her top off, because let's face it, screen time is screen time. That really made me laugh.
It's very important. All right. Pretty short monologue overall. Nothing too memorable overall for the Dinklage monologue tonight.
I did like one other thing I'll quickly throw out is when he's talking about whether Jon Snow is alive. He's like, I don't know. I have the scripts, but let's face it. If I'm not in the scene, peeny no reedy. I thought that was a nice little toss.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Winnie the Pooh and this sketch here, which certainly seemed like a weird way for SNL to go. And it's Winnie the Pooh's birthday party, and then here comes somebody, Denny the Real, Winnie the Pooh's cousin, comes to visit.
Yeah, this was an odd one for me to start off with for a couple of reasons. The first is I always thought, and again, I'm going to try so hard not to be politically incorrect. I guarantee I will inadvertently step in it, but I apologize. Given Peter Dinklage is I remember the proper term I want to be, because this is not about him. Given that he is a diminutive person, I'm sure someone will correct me with the right term. I always wonder when somebody is not looking like their traditional Matthew McConaughey guest host, do you play into that or do you not play into that? And for the most part in the show, we sort of avoided it. It was sort of an irrelevant point, which I actually liked. But this sketch, it turned out that it was an irrelevant point. But seeing the first live sketches, Peter Dinklage dressed as Winnie the Pooh, I was like, are we making height jokes out of the gate here? Really? And then, in fact, they weren't. But it was an odd placement to kind of set of weird expectations. So the whole thing sort of started a little bit weird for me. I really like Jay Farrow's character in this. I thought he did a nice job. As Mark C. 212 was saying to me earlier, which I totally agree, it's amazing to think of Jay Farrow when his first season, when he was not doing an impression of a famous actor, how he really did not have the charisma to carry a scene. And here he completely carried the scene. I don't think even my boy Bobby, I don't think necessarily brought anything specifically special to this. It really was the Jay Farrow show. And to that extent, I don't know how much I would say this worked either. But within that, there were a couple of funny lines that really made me laugh.
Yeah, I don't know where was the outcry for, you know, somebody should really talk about the weird stuff going on Winnie the Pooh. I feel like we really didn't break any new grounds to say, you know, that the Winnie the Pooh crew is kind of odd in general. I will have to say the effects I thought were very impressive. I really was very, very impressed with the overall makeup job that was done in this scene.
And this is, I mean, the thing of, you know, you're looking at Peter Dinklage, who had just done a monologue before in one commercial break, was turned into with the face makeup and the face prosthetics and stuff. So they definitely did a nice job.
Yeah. what anything stand out for you besides the overall performance of Jay Farrow here in Winnie the Pooh?
I liked when Jay Farrow was talking about, I mean, it's not a new idea comedically, but the idea that Winnie the Pooh is wearing a shirt and no pants. And he says, you look like a black guy in a porno trying to hide his gut. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very funny. I liked that when he announced that they had made your boy the new Charmin Bear and that he was going to be dripping in honeycombs, berries, and hoes. I thought that was very funny. Yeah, a couple of things here and there. For me, I would say it was almost an boy for me. It was close to that. It was dangerously on the line. Yeah,
I thought they really struggled also to find an ending for this sketch, which I think is going to be a theme of the night.
Yeah, and a weird sort of mistake that SNL usually doesn't make, which is we're ending on the joke being within a voiceover, but we as the audience are reading the same text on the screen on the fake book, so we've actually read the ending way before the narration finishes. So it was a tough out on this one.
Yeah. Anything else on Winnie the Pooh that I feel like I cut you off?
No. As much as I love Bobby, I don't know that he necessarily brought much to this, but it was fun to see all of them in makeup.
Okay. All right. So we go from that into a packaged piece, no pun intended, Naked and Afraid Celebrity Edition, Peter Dinklage and Leslie Jones.
Yeah. So, it was interesting to see on our site, on the site that we both enjoy going to, HitFix, to see what people said, that this got a very high score. For me, I was very surprised because I felt like the premise of Leslie Jones and Peter Dinklage being on Naked and Afraid is a very good idea. Okay, I get it. But once you give me that idea, just from being a fan of SNL the last year and a half, I would have written this exact sketch, and I'm not a professional comedy writer. So I think once we set it up, we were really relying on the performance of Leslie Jones and the straight man acting of Peter Dinklage, which were both good. But there for me was just no surprises. She's going to hit on him. Yep. And she's going to try to eat him, and she's going to call him yep. Check. Check. So for me, this was a tough one. It was a very novel premise, but I don't know that it did much for me in execution.
You know what? I think that this is going to be a sketch that if you are not a regular SNL viewer, if somebody just shares this post on Facebook, I think you're going to think that this is really hilarious. Peter Dinklage and Leslie Jones. If you are somebody who has seen all of SNL and sees Leslie Jones do this exact same bit every single time she's at the update desk with Colin Jost, I think that this is probably going to be a little tired for you. And that's exactly how I felt too. I feel like if this was Colin Jost on Naked and Afraid with Leslie Jones and yep. not Peter Dinklage, it would have been 95% exactly the same without calling him Tyrion and, you know, any sort of commentary on what he's packing. I think it would have been exactly note for note the same.
Exactly. I mean, it's the Leslie Jones character just being plugged into a different situation without a novel sort of take on it. So, yeah, I definitely agree. But if I didn't know Leslie Jones as well as you and I do, I might have found this much more funny.
Yeah. Ultimately, they do survive. Peter Dinklage's score goes up. For Living with Leslie Jones, her score goes down. Do you watch Naked and Afraid?
I have seen it, but I don't watch it. No. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then I believe we go right into another live sketch without any commercial, right? Is that right? That they do these three back to back to back, which again, really impressive considering the makeup from the previous Winnie the Pooh sketch. You would think that they would want to at least build a commercial in, but we come back to the restaurant and let's talk Space Pants.
Whew. This was another one.
See, I can't tell if the reaction for Space Pants online has been positive or negative.
I think it's positive. I mean, I think at the end, I will say this. For me, this was mostly, boy. Mm-hmm. But I would say they did sort of win me over by the end. My take on this is that I feel like maybe Peter Dinklage wanted to do Deep House Dish with Keenan, which is a sketch that had long been retired. But this was basically him. Peter Dinklage was doing every character that we would see a guest host and then the musical guest duet with on Deep House Dish 10 years ago. And we're just setting it in a different place. A very strange beginning, as I'm sure everybody notices. You know, we have Kyle Mooney and Pete Davidson enter, and Bobby says, "Oh, it's been hard finding you two," but then Kyle sits down. It was like a very weird thing, and he's talking to the two of them, and then suddenly John Roditsky just appears in the seat next to Pete Davidson. So it was very strange that obviously, I don't know why John Roditsky was the first thing he had been in the whole show. I don't know where he had to be beforehand that he couldn't be there on time, but also very strange that Bobby didn't ad lib a moment. Oh, Bobby and Beck, thank you, not Kyle. Thank you, Mark. It was very odd to me that that Bobby, who I love to death, did not ad lib, "Oh, he is the other one," or something. They just stuck to the script. So it started us off on a very, very weird path, even just getting into the premise.
Yeah, I did feel like that he did. I watched this scene a second time this afternoon, because I felt like I was pretty, oh boy, watching it last night. And then I felt like that the response was pretty positive. I saw a lot of people talking about space pants online. I said, okay, let me give it another shot. And I did feel like that Bobby added in like, yeah, where were you? Like, I think he like said something about it, but it was weird that the camera shot was of that they went to Bobby and Beck Bennett, and then you see Pete Davidson with the empty chair, and they went back to Bobby and Beck Bennett, and they come back, and then here's John Roditsky. And I don't know if it threw him off that, yes, he was in a sketch. He's like, wait, what? I'm on screen?
What? Right. I didn't get cut and dressed? What? I didn't even think to show up for the show. That's so crazy. I thought I was going to be the waiter who offers them drinks.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly.
And I felt like, though, I'm probably where you were also. I feel like I was won over by it towards the end because it was so wacky. But I do feel like the stuff that was going on in the foreground, the Bobby Moynihan with Pete Davidson, like the whole mob scene, I felt like was really the bigger problem here. You know, the space pants in itself, I think was, you know, there was something there, but I feel like that the part about the mafia guy with the gun and the handkerchief, like I felt like that really was, that exposition I felt like was really the trouble spot here.
Yeah, because it didn't really pay itself off. It really wasn't set up pretty well. And the only place they could really go is ultimately Bobby's character gets won over. I liked the Bobby character, as I think Johnny said on Twitter last night. Surprising that we haven't seen Bobby play a caricature of a mafia person before, because actually I liked him doing this. But you're right. It was sort of going nowhere. And then it's just ultimately, sort of the interplay between the back and then Bobby sort of singing along with Peter Dinklage, which was odd, but I'll give it to Peter Dinklage for the commitment. Yeah. I mean, he was all in on this one. It was ridiculous, and fun, very predictable, but very fun to see Gwen Stefani show up and actually feel like she was just being herself any day of the week in this sketch. Mm-hmm. This didn't feel like anything special. This feels like that's just Gwen Stefani. I think she may have brought her own wardrobe for this sketch. I think she may have, this sketch may have been inspired by actual space shorts.
Yeah.
That Gwen Stefani has. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I did like when Peter Dinklage was like, "Excuse me, you're talking down there during my song. That's very rude." I liked when that, but I thought there was another problem where you had that. I think it was John Roditsky says in the sketch, like, hold on. I think we have something that's going to be more interesting to you than the $20,000 that we owe you. And I'm like, okay, well, where is this going? And that was just like another throwaway piece of dialogue where it was like, it made me sort of like, okay, now my mind is wondering, okay, what are they going to offer to Bobby Moynihan's character to get out of the situation? But it just was, throwaway dialogue or, yes, set up a line that got cut.
Yeah, I think it was just throwaway to make it seem like, oh, this is an important conversation that they should be having if it wasn't for the Space Pants song going on the stage. So, I think this sort of, it saved itself in just its commitment to its ridiculousness. Gwen Stefani being a great sport kind of added to the energy, not the comedy of the scene, but the energy of the scene. And you know what? I'll take it. I'm easy. That's fine. So, not the worst thing ever.
No. All right. So, Rich, let's talk about this trendy new restaurant that's opened up.
So this for me was, boy, this was a real. So this is what's interesting about this episode, which I wanted to say here, is it was such an atypical episode because so many of the sketches really were just visual sight gags. And that's what we have. Really, that's what Space Pants was for the most part. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see sort of a run between Glory Hole, Bobby Moynihan as a stop motion outfit, dead guy in the honeymoon suite. Like we really, it was just a lot of sketches back to back that were nothing more than sight gags, which was very strange to me. I thought it was a very odd call. This was a weird one. There was so much setting the table, and I do mean that pun intended. I went back and timed it. You know, the gag of the loaf of bread coming through the glory hole happens a minute and 25 seconds in. We've got Peter Dinklage and A.D. Bryant explain it. Then we have the waiter come over to explain it, but then says, I'll let these guys explain it, and then leaves. And then Peter Dinklage and A.D. Bryant then give us more exposition. And then Kyle Mooney's face in the window sets. I was like, holy smokes, how much setup are we doing for this?
So was the destination worth the journey?
Well, here's what I would say. Out of the gate, the first loaf of bread, very funny sight gag. I mean, it definitely made me laugh as far as A, that's just funny, and B, wow, they're going there. But then it didn't go anywhere past that. We basically just did different metaphors for penises through the hole.
So
I felt like for me, we just sort of like, oh, it was a sight gag, a very good sight gag that we just then did four more times.
Well, okay. I thought it was inspired in terms of I had never seen that gag before. So I have to give them credit for doing something that I had not seen before. I thought that was an original idea. And I'm sure that when this came up at dress rehearsal or, you know, at the table read, I'm sure there was not a dry eye in the house for them to do this. So
yes,
kudos there. I'm with you through Pumpernickel. Again, very, very funny. A lot of commitment there with 80 and with Dinklage. So all yes, very good. I felt like the ending, though, the corn dog, I felt like, I felt like we didn't build on what we had done the first two times. I'm really not even sure what Beck Bennett is doing at the end of the sketch.
It was a weird throwaway. Like he thinks, oh, I guess we're just going to take it up the butt, which was, it was a weird way. I will say that I thought Dinklage was great. A.D. Bryant was very good. Weirdly for me, I thought that, Vanessa Bayer was to me sort of the MVP of the sketch. Her straight manning of like, I didn't hear any of the words you just said. Like a lot of those, like, I can't even understand what you're saying right now because of what's going on. I thought she did a really fun job of grounding the scene.
Also, I am a little confused why Jay Farrow needed to come in and why there needed to be a handoff from the waiter. It didn't really seem like it paid off at all.
I felt like there was something that got trimmed down as far as we're going from a white waiter and the French bread to a black waiter and the pumpernickel bread, but it got lost somewhere along the way, the direct connection, and it ended up just feeling like more exhibition that we didn't need. I don't know. It was definitely an unusually busy scene for such a simple premise.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about the HBO first look, the big Game of Thrones set piece.
Again, I love Bobby. This was made for me, but they didn't really give Bobby anything to do enough to go, oh, this, to me, again, we're seeing the Game of Thrones, which is odd that we've got Kate McKinnon in the exact same outfit she was in the monologue, which makes me think that's the monologue was hastily rewritten because it was the exact same outfit playing the exact same character. And we see that Bobby Motion is the stop out. He's the Andy Serkis of Game of Thrones. But then it was mostly just him going, rah, rah, which was amusing. But for me, there was one moment when Taron Killam's delivering lines of dialogue as the actor, and he says something like, "War is not a game." And then Bobby Moynihan goes, "Of Thrones." They're like, "Cut, cut." Like at least that gave him something. Other than that, it was just a lot of watching. It felt like, again, it really wasn't more than a sight gag of look at Bobby Moynihan in this outfit, as opposed to giving Bobby a great character to do some really interesting stuff.
The production values were incredible. That they really, it could not have looked better. It was impressive. You feel like that they had to, maybe they started building these sets like for weeks knowing that Dinklage was coming. So epic, completely fantastic. It looked amazing. It looked like the real show.
And when they used the SNL actors as the Game of Thrones characters, and then we see the real dragon, it looked like an episode of Game of Thrones. That dragon, the real dragon, looked amazing. I don't know if they were stealing from the real show and matting it in, mm-hmm. or if they did their own effects, but that piece sold it so well. I thought that part was really good.
But it was all sizzle and no steak. There was no joke here. I don't even understand what the jokes were that Bobby Moynihan, it took some half an hour to get in and out of the costume. I didn't understand what his character was.
Yeah, it felt in premise, not that they were stealing from this, but it felt a kindred spirit to me. One of the iconic version of this sketch was actually not SNL. It was a long time ago at the MTV Movie Awards when Ben Stiller played Tom Cruise's stunt double, mm-hmm. and with the real Tom Cruise, and it was him. It was seeing Ben Stiller trying to show that his character was so integral to the Tom Cruise movies, and in fact, he's just this nothing guy. He's really nothing more than a stunt double, and it was so iconically funny, and I felt like this was sort of that was its spirit animal, the sketches, and yet it didn't capture really any of those great nuances that made that thing so iconic of a sketch.
Right, and I think you could probably have done more service to that of like setting up interviews with Bobby Moynihan, like sort of like he wants to do the same sort of interviews that Peter Dinklage is doing and Emilia Clarke is doing, and they're like, no, we got it. We don't need to hear from you, and like him like trying to make a big point of. So I think that you're right. I think that's a good point. But I just felt like that there was really, other than, hey, look, it's Game of Thrones, like I felt like that this really, really struggled to have a point.
Yeah, and by the point we get to, he's caught up in the wires and maybe it's pulling on him or it's pulling on his private parts or something, but then it's stuck and they have to cut him down. It was just, I hate to use Bobby's name and boy in the same sentence, but Watching it back would say, oh boy, that was a tough, like, kind of ending. I was very excited for it to wrap up.
Right. And not to really nitpick here, but if you're going to do a setup about Game of Thrones inside look of season 6, I don't know if Daenerys is in Marine in season 6. So I don't really know.
Really... good catch.
Yeah. all right, let's go ahead and let's talk about Gwen Stefani when she's not singing about space pants or shorts. So let's bring in the great editor of Exclaim magazine, James Keese. James, are you ready to talk about Gwen Stefani here tonight?
I certainly am. In fact, I have an update on the space shorts.
Yes.
They were not hers, but they are now because she took them home.
Okay. Space shorts.
At the specific request of her beau, Blake Shelton, who tweeted, "Please, Gwen Stefani, bring the space shorts home." And she tweeted a photo back at him and said that they were already packed.
Okay. All right. So space shorts are coming home.
Yeah. A lot of Blake Shelton tweeting and being retweeted by SNL, NBC. Yeah. Look at them. The couple.
Synergy.
The little power couple.
Synergy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about Gwen and her performance here tonight. James, how'd she do coming out of the gate?
Well, in fact, the first song is rumored to be about Blake.
Whoa.
Make Me Like You is what it's called. And, you know, I thought it was a super catchy pop number. For those ancient dinosaurs in the audience, sort of reminded me of the early 2000s Cardigans hit Love Fool.
Oh.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I remember it vividly.
So it kind of rung a bat for me. And, you know, Gwen Stefani in her younger years was kind of a punkier ska punk chick. And she's gone in a softer kind of pop direction. And it was a very sweet, catchy, charming kind of song. And they seem like they're very in love. And that's all good.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I liked it. For me, it was only a 3-chair turnaround, not a 4-chair turnaround. But I did like it.
Okay. All right. Then what about Gwen Stefani's second number of the night?
So I only had one word in my notes for her second song.
Yes.
That word was abs.
Whoa.
Because I mean, ridiculous. The woman is 46 years old. She looks amazing. And I was mesmerized by her flat stomach. I can't help it.
Yeah. Okay.
So the other side of Gwen Stefani's relationships, this song Misery is apparently about her breakup with Gavin Rossdale, her longtime husband. So we're getting kind of two sides of Gwen's personal life on the show tonight.
Beginnings and endings.
I watched this twice and I have literally no memory of this song at all. It just kind of goes by, and it's neither offensive nor good, really. It's just there.
James, overall, are you a fan of the work of Gwen Stefani?
You know, I was a fan of a couple of No Doubt songs back in the day, and they were certainly ubiquitous when I would, you know, I was in university at the time. So, you know, she was fine. I was never a huge fan.
Mm-hmm.
But this is her first music in 8 years, I think, 9 years. And she hasn't been on the show since 2005, even though this is her sixth time that she's been on the show.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think she's going to break the record. Dave Grohl owns the record with 11 music appearances.
Wow. I wouldn't have picked Dave Grohl.
It's a lot of different bands.
Okay. All right. So Gwen Stefani in the rearview mirror. We're coming up with Margot Price on the next live show. Anything you could preview for Margot Price?
Well, she's a young and up and coming country singer. And so I don't really know a lot about her, but I think so. This is going to be an introduction, I think, to a lot of people for her. And it should be interesting.
Okay. Anything else musically about the show this week, James?
Space Pants.
Space Pants. Thumbs up for Space Pants?
Yeah, there's going to be Space Pants remixes this week hitting SoundCloud.
Yeah, it's coming. All right, well, James, great job. We'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Talk to you next week.
All right, follow James on Twitter. He's at Exclaim Editor. Take care, James. All right, Rich. Let's continue with Weekend Update to talk about whether or not Weekend Update has kept up the momentum over it's had this season. All right. You want to start off with the performances of Shay and Jost?
Yeah, I thought this was good. I don't know that I will say I didn't write any jokes down this week, mm-hmm. which is not necessarily a big criticism, but just there was nothing that just had me over the moon laughing. But I thought that in general, again, I felt that the energy is working well. Che's energy has risen a bit. The interplay and timing between the two guys was nice. So I thought this was solid as far as just them. Solid, not spectacular, but not a crash and burn. So I thought it was good. It's certainly a good sign that we're sort of hitting our stride after some real tough starts early on. I thought they did a good job.
I did like the run about the women should not be punished. If this is the puzzle on Wheel of Fortune,
yes.
You should not say women should be punished. So that was all pretty good.
Yes, that was very good. You're right. Yes.
Pete Davidson shows up to talk about the Hulk Hogan Gawker decision. What did you think of Pete Davidson here?
I like this, and I like this. I don't want to say a lot, but I really like this. And I think, again, I'm a bit of a broken record on this or a skipping CD, but I did feel like I like that he is breaking out of using a topical news story to tell some biographical story that is clearly from his stand-up act. This mm-hmm. was Pete Davidson commenting on the actual story and Hulk Hogan, which is a topical news event. And I thought he did a very nice job. I thought, the writing more than the performing, I thought was in general was quite good. I thought it was really fun. I thought it was a fun take. I've heard a lot of the general jokes before, but the specifics were funny and he was very affable about it. And I thought it was a nice light, most of the jokes that he did could have been done by Michael Che or Colin Jost, but I liked that it was Pete Davidson. Kind of brings his own personality to it, changes the energy up a little bit of Weekend Update, and I thought it was good.
Yeah, and he seems more comfortable at the update desk as we go on and on. Easy to forget how young he is because he seems like he's already been on the show for a long time now. Good job by Pete Davidson. Okay. Also, David Ortiz is back. Now, in the past, you've been a bigger David Ortiz on Weekend Update, a bigger fan than I have. What did you think of this time out for Keenan as David Ortiz?
I have no legitimate right to like this bit. And yet, it makes me laugh every freaking time. When he starts the lineup of the Mofongo and the blah, and I just start giggling like a teenager. Yeah. I don't know why this. I hate Willie. I hate Jean Valjean. Where the hell his name is? I hate every Keenan Week Update character more than the next. And then Big Poppy. He doesn't look like Big Poppy. He doesn't sound like Big Poppy. It has nothing to do with baseball, and yet it just makes me laugh like a freaking idiot. I thought it was this the best Big Poppy we've seen. No, but by the end, my wife Jen was watching, and at first she was like, "I don't understand why you're laughing right now." And by the end, she was laughing just as hard as I was. It's silly incarnate done to me super well.
Yeah. To me, the food stuff doesn't tickle me that much. I do like when he gets into like the endorsements that he has, baseball all really, really strong stuff.
Yeah. Just so silly and so fun. That was, I thought it was great. So fun way to end Weekend Update, which was good.
Yeah. And it does look like Big Poppy is going to retire before Keenan will. Does not seem like they're on the same calendar.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
All right. Let's talk about the honeymoon suite. And this sketch, which I thought was, a pretty ingenious in terms of what they came up with. So the premise is couple on a honeymoon. They have this suite, which has a big view of the ocean. And now here is Taron Killam as a dead body.
Yeah. Again, for me, it was a great sight gag. Mm-hmm. It was a very funny sight gag. Taron Killam's performance as a dead person was better than half the cast as live people. So very funny to watch that. I don't know that they effectively built a sketch around it. I think adding another dead person felt a little to me. Mm-hmm. Absolutely some funny lines in here. Dinklage absolutely sort of just, played the straight man very well.
His character's name?
Oh, Raul or something like that. It was like
Ray Ark.
Yeah, Ray Ark was a very strange.
I think he was very good, Dinklage. I think he was very funny here.
Yeah, did a very fine job. But it was just oddly fun to see what at first I thought might have been green screen or a video. So nope, it was Taron Killam just legitimately pretending to be a dead person. So that was cute. I don't know that the whole idea that that Beck Bennett still wants to have sex regardless. And it's our honeymoon and they're getting comped. Mm-hmm. Similar to the Bobby Moynihan as a gangster in front of Space Pants. It was just sort of like, and so it didn't really adding a dead body did not move the scene forward. It was just literally more of the same for me. So I don't know. I didn't like this as much as probably everybody else.
Yeah. I thought that it was a pretty fun idea. I think I agree about they did not really know how to get out of it, and then they have the leak coming in, and again it seems like then they just sort of like cut it right after that. So I don't know if it was a perfect sketch by any stretch of the imagination, but I felt like that on this night I felt like it was one of the better ideas they had.
Fair enough.
Let's talk about the Vacation Nightmares and the Dutch Muggers. Or the Danish Muggers, Danish.
This was another weird... it didn't work for me on paper, but again, everyone in the sketch was so funny that it didn't win me over, but it definitely kept me from falling into full old boy territory. It was silly enough and I like that we just have the premise that it was very hard to cast this, and the fact that they're miming, you know, a phone. Like, it did get sillier and sillier. Thank God this sketch is at 12:40 at night, because this was just such a dumb idea done fairly well, with a nice couple of turns here and there. And then I felt like they were really running out of ideas when they bring in Kyle Mooney to do his Amsterdam rapper that he always does in the town hall sketches. Which I don't know why we needed that suddenly. Fun enough.
Yeah, I think it was pretty fun. You know, there was a lot of different levels between it was the reenactment with the Danish muggers who were calling everybody, I'm Danish, bitch. So I liked that level. And then I liked the cutting to the real people who this had happened. Like, this was nothing like what happened. They weren't even women so I liked that. And then I also liked Dinklage having to like reconcile as the narrator about like, okay, well, admittedly, this was, a tough thing to cast. It was non-union. So I kind of like the logic of that also. So I feel like overall, I felt like this was fine for me. I don't have any gripes with this one.
Yeah, and I will say I liked that SNL went very off their usual thing of the premise, the explanation of the premise, which we start out, this was a hard thing to cast, instead of going, okay, here is the logic for the why, and then moving on. They kept sort of, every time they went back to Dinklage, he had more explanation as to why this was going on, which I thought, good on them. That was sort of a fun twist.
All right, and then let's talk about the magic show where... Dinklage is the boss who is the butt of the joke and does not appreciate it, and then is really looking for a lot of explanation about what's going on here.
Yeah,
really, you're down on this one too.
This was really I get it on paper,
right?
And God bless Dinklage for committing 100% to a sketch that the audience was not finding funny. The extras sitting around him were not finding funny. I don't think Taron Killam was finding it funny. I thought this was really tough. I get it on paper, but it didn't go anywhere enough that I just wanted it to be over. I was just like, okay, is there going to be a moat tonight? Is there not going to be a moat? What's going on? I just wanted it to be over, but I will commend them really sticking to it, especially Dinklage. More Taron Killam was fine. I felt like maybe there could have been more with his character to kind of give this some life. Whatever. What are you going to do?
I really liked Dinklage's performance here. I thought that he was the character that he was playing and just the voice that he was doing the whole time. I liked his I liked, how committed he was to it. And then there was some little things there that I liked where he's like, so I have to be, this joke that you and your wife, and it's like, hold on, she's not my wife. And if she's your wife, if she's not your wife, then why are you dressed the same? And he's like, people don't always dress like their wife. And then Vanessa was dressed exactly like him. And he's like, I just thought that was some fun business. For a 10-to-1 sketch, I thought this was also fine for me. So yeah, these update sketches.
Yes, I agree.
Oh, yes. Overall, I had been, my expectations were so high and I had really just come down to sea level after update, but I have no issues with these post update sketches.
We'll agree to disagree on this one. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the goodbyes. All right. What did you think about Peter Dinklage and the cast? Did it seem like that they had gotten along? Because as you had mentioned, Peter Dinklage does have a bit of a reputation of being you know, not the friendliest guy.
Yeah, he does not have the best reputation. And it was interesting to see that there was a real moat between him and Gwen Stefani. There was a good 4 to 6 feet. Now, here's my asterisk to this. And again, I think because of Peter Dinklage's height, they may have done it out of a deference to not wanting to be standing right on top of him. And I say that specifically because after they said goodnight, I was watching it a couple of times and I felt like Taron Killam was giving Dinklage a look of just like, great job. Like, you did a great job. And Kyle Mooney gave him a big hug. And there was a lot of photos on Twitter of Leslie Jones and Peter Dinklage who really liked him. And they obviously were very close. So I think actually he really endeared himself to the cast. I got a very warm feeling from him. So I liked that. Mark noted something I thought's worth calling out. It was weird that Gwen Stefani's band was not on the stage, which is very odd. I don't know. That's obviously Gwen's choice. I don't think there's a chance that the band said, I'm good. I'm good in the green room. I don't need the stage time. I'm fine.
For Gwen.
And it's of course not an SNL choice because we always have the band, even if it's nobody's, even if it's session players. So very odd choice, I thought.
Yeah. It's interesting. You guys are good. They're really, even identifying Gwen Stefani's band and whether they're on the stage or not. That's a really very deep analysis.
Yeah, that's Mark. Mark's got the music eyes that I don't always notice.
Yeah. Okay. So, Rich, any final thoughts on Dinklage and this week's episode?
Yeah, for me, I put it in the category of overall misses. I feel like we've had such good, you know, when even the Ariana Grande, I think our last one was for me just a lot better. And we had been on kind of a roll of some really good, especially Larry David and Ronda Rousey, you know, so we had some really good ones. But, you know, you can't hit a home run every time you get up to play. It's going to happen. Next week, we've got Russell Crowe, who's never hosted before. Very nervous how that one's going to go. That could be hilarious or that could be really rough waters. So that one I don't know about, but then we end April with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, obviously an alumni of the show in that sort of Sarah Silverman category of alumni, but not known for being an alumni, known for being famous for something else. But she is absolutely a comic pro. I think that's going to be the highlight of the month before we go on our hiatus. Before, dare I say it, we come back for what will probably be the 3 final episodes of the season. Wow. So we are really getting towards the end.
The nitty gritty. Okay. So yeah, the Russell Crowe thing was a bit of a blindside. I did not even know that Russell Crowe and JLD had been announced. Do you think that it's possible that we end up with, you said it's going to be next week Larry David was going to host, but do you think that we'll see a Larry David appearance when Julia Louis-Dreyfus is the host, or will that depend completely on what Bernie Sanders is doing?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, and I had mentioned it just generically saying next week with Larry David, but I do think you're right. I think he will wait. He's very close with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She was on Curb after, you know, Seinfeld. I think we'll see him for that, you know, unless of course something very interesting happens this week with Bernie. And then I think they would sort of beg him to come on, you know, as he's topical.
Okay. All right, Rich, great work once again. Anything else you want to make sure we know about before we wrap this up?
No, I'd love to mark through a link in the show notes in the chat room about an article about the band, the SNL band, which I want to check out. And at some point, we'll have a sub podcast talking about the other, the Lonely Island sketch show, Party Over Here.
How's it been?
It is produced by the partnership of O and Boy.
Oh, come on.
And I love everyone involved in the show, but yeah, it is rough. I haven't seen so this far. Week. So maybe this week gets better.
I hear this is the week it turns around.
I hope so.
Okay. All right. Great job once again, Rich. Thanks to everybody who joined us live in the chat room. We'll be back again next Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, to talk about the Russell Crowe episode. Very excited to do it once again next week. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre, who gets the SNL podcast out to you guys. Greatly appreciate that. Until next time, we'll take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.